Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Hey there, it's Zach. I'm still by myself. Laura's still gone, having the time of her life. I just saw some pictures of her from Russia and her kid, who apparently is able to nap anywhere. So here's the deal. We're still on a little bit of a hiatus. So I had an opportunity today, actually, to interview Claudia Gruff Grounds. And she wrote a book called We've Had This Fight Before. Earlier, if you've listened to the podcast, you may have heard us review the book last fall. But I did it. I reviewed it without reading it. And then I read it and I love it. And I think it's a book that you should have on your shelf, whether you're a couple or a therapist. And she just was so smart and so fun to talk to. And I think you'll enjoy this conversation. So stick around. Hi, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Zach. Nice to be with you.
Where are you right now?
So I'm in my hometown, San Diego, California. Just returned after being about 18 years in Seattle. So it's going back to the home of our children and kids. So it's pretty cool.
San Diego, you said?
Yeah.
Is it hot there?
No, it's beautiful. It's about 78.
Oh, nice. And so what are you doing? Like, what do you do for fun?
What I do for fun, I go to the beach and I go to movies. We do big parties for Academy Awards, so I stay up with all the movies. And
nice.
And then I play with I have a grandbaby here and a grandbaby on the way, so I play with grandbabies.
Yeah, you said maybe today your kids were coming back from the airport or something?
Right. Our oldest kids are moving from Washington, D.C. back here to San Diego to live with us after being away for 16 years. So it's pretty cool.
So when you were in Seattle, what were you doing? I know, but I want to let everybody else know.
Okay. So I moved up to Seattle in 2000 to be the chair of the Marriage and Family Therapy Program at Seattle Pacific University. So it was to kind of grow the program at that time and to get it under national accreditation and to build a team around that.
Very cool. And are you still in education?
I am. Before I was at Seattle Pacific University, I taught for 10 years at University of San Diego and wrote a textbook that is used a lot called Essential Skills in Family Therapy with the team down here. So when I came back, I get to teach there again. So I'm teaching part-time, doing some supervision at University of San Diego now.
So do you have like a kind of a core philosophy when you think about particularly couples work? Because we're on Marriage Therapy Radio. We don't do a ton of like parenting or family stuff. But when you think about couples work, where does your head go?
That was always my specialty since I was interested in doing couples therapy. I think it came from my own family background where my parents were really, really different. And I had a good relationship with both of them, but I had to kind of bridge the gap between those differences. So I think I got trained early to know how to do that. And I was the specialization worked in that time was mostly behavioral therapy that I was trained in the early years, but it really didn't work with a lot of different therapists. So over time, I've just continued to grow and learn about couples therapy in a lot of different ways and try things myself and come up with my own ideas. And I've done training. I teach classes in couples therapy for years and years. So it's kind of integrating all my ideas when I do couples therapy. The biggest thing is I think that most couples don't know how to become a we. They fight, kind of compete to be the me in the relationship and win.
Yeah.
Like my way is my way and you just give into my way. And they don't know how to create this new system of relationship that's the we without either losing the me or competing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my main philosophy is how do you create a healthy we with all the differences that that you bring in a couple.
Yeah. That's funny. I just had a client yesterday, actually, a couple yesterday, and they were doing that exact same thing. I was watching them kind of go back and forth about what happened over the weekend, like on what it was like, was it Thursday or was it Friday? And was it on the phone or was it over text? And they're trying to recreate this argument. And I finally just said, what is the end of this? Like, is the end of this that one of you goes, you're right, you win, I was wrong, and point for you. And they both were like, no. And I said, well, that's certainly how you're talking. You're certainly yes. talking like that's the end of it. So yeah. what is the we end? You know? So I dig it. I dig it.
I also probably the other piece of philosophy is that I've had the privilege of not only training therapists, but physicians and clergy. Huh. And so my training has been more holistic. So I think one of the things that's distinctive about me is I really do pay attention to the biology of coupling, where people's differences are, you know, genetic, inherited, you know, their brains are wired differently, their personalities are wired differently, and they bring that into coupling, and they have to make, that's not going to change. That's inherently who they are. Yeah. They have to make room for that in each other. So I think there's a biological and also kind of a spiritual side of things around couples that a lot of people don't pay attention to. So mine's a little broader, I think.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the reason I got you on is because I did you a disservice earlier this year or last year. So I had a client come in who was a wife of a heterosexual couple, and she'd been in her own personal therapy, and her therapist had given her your book, and I didn't read the book. I just let her describe it to me. And when I listened to her description, I was like, I don't know. That sounds kind of like not that interesting to me. And so we actually talked about it on the podcast, and I sort of put it down before I even read it. And then I read it, and I love it. I think it's such a great resource, in part because of what you're talking about, which is this idea of becoming a we. And then also, there's so much sort of integrated knowledge in it. You know, Laura and I are both certified Gottman therapists, so we tend to veer toward sort of all of that kind of research base as primary. Mm-hmm. But yours has a ton of just different sort of inputs, including John's, but like different therapists or different clinicians or different authors that you've collected in a really concise way. So I want to let you talk about it. I want you to, so the book is, We've Had This Fight Before. Tell me about how you wrote it and how did it come about? And what's it been like for you to become a published author?
Thanks. Well, I appreciate that you gave it a chance and looked at it and, cause the philosophy behind it is, you know, couples don't have three fights. They don't have 300 fights. They have three fights.
Right.
So it seems kind of simplistic, but it really comes from my clinical knowledge and wisdom. It actually started because I was in a adult education church youth group, and we were doing stuff on relationships. And I said, well, they said, Claudia, why don't you talk about couples? Because that's something you do, and you've been working with it for, 15, 20 years. So I outlined it, and that's kind of the outline of the book, to be honest. I mean, over time, it's developed, and the research part of it's pretty clear. Being an academic, you pay attention to that kind of stuff. But it's really my clinical wisdom where I sit with couples, and they kind of have different needs, and that, so therefore different theories, different perspectives, different skills are going to be helpful to work with the couple. And that's where I came from. So the synthesis of the book is basically there's biological fights, there's psychosocial fights, and there's spiritual fights. I would say in some, at least that's the mindset I have behind it, which has to do with, why can't you be more like me, which is more of the biological fights. Why can't you be more like my family, which is the psychosocial fights, how we're trained in our upbringing. And most of couples therapy plays with that domain. And then why can't you understand my pain, which has to do with like a transcendent or bigger meaning that couples really get to a lot of times to say, what is this, what's life about? How does a relationship bring in healing or continue in the hurt that I've come up from? Mm. So when I'm talking about spirituality, I'm talking about kind of a larger meaning purpose. And it has a lot to do with trauma and how everybody brings at least a little bit of trauma into a relationship. So there's biology, there's psychosocial aspects, and there's spirituality in how couples fight. Yeah. So I try to figure that out as like a detective.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. That's my favorite metaphor. When couples come in, I ask them early on, I say, what are you looking for? Do you want like a coach, a wizard, a doctor, mm-hmm. A priest, a father, a cheerleader?
Great question.
And they'll say, oh, can I get a wizard? or you just like that means that as well. But I tend to want to play detective because I think that there is this kind of solving to do. But I think the piece that I pushed back on before I'd read the book was this idea of why can't you be more like my family? I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit. Like, what's the root of that for you as you think about how to make sense of it for couples?
The root of that really comes from probably my early family therapy training, which was a lot in Bowen, Murray Bowen's work, looking at multi-generational legacies that, you know, people bring into their being and how they function and what they do and how they communicate and how they have learned to partner or how they react to how they've seen partnering done. So in that, how why can't you be more like my family has to do with that there's a subtle way in which a couple often is kind of wanting their way or their definition of doing coupling to be the one that wins. And is kind of played out because of the relationships that they've come from themselves more individually. So as you broaden that capacity to figure that out, it's helpful. And you can use really specific skills, like I think John Gottman's work is fantastic around, you know, some conflict resolution of practical ideas and communication skills and kind of prioritizing things. But it doesn't always get to that energy, that emotional energy behind it of where does that come from. And sometimes that comes from the family. So that's one fight. Why can't you be more like my family is, you know, why don't we do birthdays this way? That was how I grew up. And how can't you do it this way? Or why don't we parent this way if you're a couple with kids, you know, and there's kind of, or how come we can't spend money this way? And it comes a lot from those legacies of the family that are both practical and also very strongly emotional.
Because that's what you learn, just sort of almost like, you know how they say that it's easier for children to learn another language when they're younger? So it's almost like the learning of what it means to be a family or be a person in a relationship is sort of ingrained, almost like language that you've learned as a young person. And it's easier.
Very well said. Exactly. Yeah. And it's deeply in us, in our cells almost, you know, so it's even, you're not aware of that. So sometimes in couples therapy, it's very helpful for us to kind of take a time out from trying to change things and just look at, hey, what did you grow up with? What were the models you had? Did you react to those models? Did you like those models? Do you want to do it differently now if you're coupling now at this point? And so that's a piece of it. And yet that's not the only thing that happens, because there are things like, you know, one person sleeps longer than the other, one has more energy, or one's more extroverted and introverted. And I think that's another kind of fight, which is more biology.
Yeah.
And that's something you have to make room for. You can't just change or negotiate or compromise. With family stuff, you can often compromise. You can kind of do a give and take, or we're going to spend time here and we're going to spend time there. But with biology, I don't think there's compromising, because it's really how we function well or in our bodies or don't.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
And that's the first fight, the one, why can't you be more like me?
Right. And that's the first fight.
Sleep the same as well as me, or want to exercise as much as me, or whatever.
Exactly. Or get, you know, energized. I think there's a lot of things where we're energized. Like some of my kids, you know, have partnered, and their partner is more maybe introverted than their partner is. And so one's more extrovert, one's more introvert. And we see that happens from the time people are pretty little.
You see my shirt?
They get energized by being by themselves or by being with other people. And that's not going to change. Yeah, there's introvert. I see it on your t-shirt.
I have a t-shirt that says introvert that I'm wearing right now, because I have to remind my wife not to talk to me sometimes.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah. Did you know that we have a phone number? We do. It's actually a Google Voice number that we have available for folks like you, listeners, who want to ask us a question or offer a suggestion or just tell us that you like us, like this caller, Julie. Julie called us to let us know why she became a Patreon donor and why she supports the podcast. We keep the lights on because of folks who contribute monthly, and we could really use your help. And if you need an argument about why, then you can listen to Julie here. But also, if you ever want to call us, it's 801-810-6197. Thanks for listening. Here's Julie.
Hi, this is Julie, and I became a patron of Marriage Therapy Radio today. I like how your perspective on relationships are different than the ones I'm typically around, and I appreciate that the episodes are relatively short, which feels manageable. I generally listen to them while running. And even though I enjoy them, I've always felt guilty when I hear you plug becoming a patron, because the lowest category is $5 a month, which amounts to $1.25 an episode, and I know I'm getting more value than $1.25 out of listening each week. I mean, it's a lot less expensive than counseling. So I felt guilty for never following through. But the big reason it took me so long to become a patron is that I was too lazy to figure out how to do it, because I've never supported any podcast and it sounded complicated. So for whatever reason, after listening to the recent episode, I decided to Google how to become a patron for Marriage Therapy Radio. And I opened the page, clicked the link to become a patron, and was even able to remain lazy and use PayPal as opposed to typing in my credit card number. So easy. So now I'll be able to listen to y'all each week and not feel guilty. And I just wanted to share that in case there are others like me who've never supported a podcast and felt overwhelmed at trying to figure out one more task on the to-do list. So thanks so much for bringing the marriage tip and for the rad jokes every week. Bye.
So, okay. So we covered maybe the two of them. And then the third one, this idea of why can't you hear my pain, or why can't you
understand my pain?
Talk about that.
So I think all people have a certain amount of neglect. Nobody's had a perfect upbringing, and nobody's had a perfect history of their own coupling. And that stuff gets played out in a longing for a partner to get that part of them, to, you know, maybe not criticize them or not shame them. I mean, that's human at one level, but for some people it's punctuated, or it's you know, it's kind of layered because of that person's history. So those themes, I think there's themes that come up all the time emotionally in terms of kind of vulnerabilities that every person brings in their partnership and longings. And I think our world doesn't prepare people to couple in that way. Mm. We tend to be very pragmatic. We tend to be a really pragmatic culture. And so it's more like a negotiation, like a contract. But not like, what is there something about attachment and intimacy that provokes human meaning at a broader level? So that's the third fight, because it's through pain a lot of times that people existentially figure out what life is for, and can you hang in there with somebody even if they're really vulnerable or hurt? Mm. And that gets played out with a couple. And certain kinds of therapy and psychotherapy pay attention to that, and certain kinds of therapy and psychotherapy kind of minimize that or don't pay attention to that. So that's kind of that third theme that in my trainings, that you look at a longing for your partner to get you in your vulnerability, to not re-injure you, but to actually soothe you and support you and be there in it, even if you're primitive and childlike and stupid and reactive. It's not rational. It's very, you know, stay attached no matter what kind of desire or longing. I'm not saying you always do that in a couple relationship, but that's the longing underneath it. Does that make sense to you?
Sort of. I'm about to ask you for some supervision, some free supervision, because I had a conversation yesterday with, I think, exactly the same couple that I was describing earlier. And I started to veer into my limited understanding of attachment theory. Because it was clear to me that one of them was avoidant and one of them was anxious, and they were playing with that together. And is that an area that you are versed in and can talk to me about in terms of, like, what do you do when you have somebody who's avoidant pairing up with somebody who's anxious, and they're doing, they're trying to figure out how to make it work?
So I wouldn't say it, you know, it's my core expertise, but I've done certainly some training around attachment work and Sue Johnson's work and emotionally focused therapy. So in that, you look at the dance that that creates. So attachment is thought of at an individual level, like one person's anxious and one person's avoidant. That's more of that personal level. But then how does that then create a dance between the two of them? So usually the avoidant moves away and the anxious one moves towards. So you have kind of a pursuer, distancer, or in this case, distancer, pursuer kind of dance that the couple is working on. So as a therapist, I would start looking at that dance, like the rhythm that they both actually are contributors to the dance. They're both dancing with each other. It's not in one person or the other person's domain only. And usually the better place to start in couples therapy is with the avoidant one, is to have, as the therapist, to kind of come alongside and kind of push the anxious one to say, I'll get to you, I promise. And then kind of get to the avoidant one and say, tell me what's going on that you need to pull away. You need to protect yourself. What does it feel like when you're protecting yourself? What are you protecting from? And have them talk to you and not to their partner. Mm-hmm. And get to, the idea is you get down to what we call primary emotions, which is more fear or sadness about something. And when they get to that they would turn and then tell their partner that maybe the sadness of, I feel like I'm never good enough for you. I feel like I'm never going to meet your standards and you're going to somehow figure that out and leave me someday. That scares me. That makes me sad.
So I'm going to be the leaver.
You shift the conversation from the pursuer distance kind of behavioral level to the primary emotions underneath it. Does that make sense?
It does. In fact, I was talking to them and I was thinking about that movie Inside Out with the Pixar characters up in the head.
It's a great one. And
I was saying, you have about five emotions. You've got these five colors right here. But anger, you know, is red, but there's also rouge and crimson and blood and pink and scarlet. And she has much more of those, right? She's got all these nuanced feelings, but he goes straight to anger or fear or, you know, or he's happy because everything's smooth, you know? So that's interesting though. I'm going to have to play with that dance metaphor a little bit because I think we're close to kind of cracking the code for them, but it's going to be because they both own their own sort of attachment style.
Yeah. Owning that attachment style. And then actually in couples therapy, what I really emphasize is couples therapy is a different thing than individual therapy. So in the ownership that their partner has compassion for, they have empathy basically and care about that vulnerability part of their partner. And they're able to share it. So they connect. That's where the attachment, a solid attachment comes when there's a really good empathic connection. Like if I really get how scared you are in this situation and I care about you, then I'm going to not push you or not pull you. I can just sit and I'll be with you. It's okay. When you calm down, we'll get through this together. So it becomes a secure attachment. Whereas if I say, don't do that, or, you know, you're stupid to feel that way or whatever, then you're going to become reclusive. You're going to pull away from me because you're so scared. And then that will isolate and then makes a more insecure attachment, which shows up in avoidant or anxious behavior.
Yeah, right on. I get it. So I want to go back to the book for just a few minutes because I wonder, I don't want to put you on the spot exactly, but one of the things I love about your book is that you articulate what are called A skills, B skills, and C skills.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's so handy because people can latch onto that. They can remember because, of course, all the A skills start with A and all the B skills start with B and all the C skills start with C. But do you want to speak to that?
It's amazing how that works.
I know. And I'm a sucker for it because the book that I wrote was called The Relationship Alphabet, and it's in alphabetical order through A to Z, different topics. And so I'm a sucker for like repetition and alliteration and, you know, making things easy. But talk to me a little bit about A skills, B skills, and C skills.
So since this is a self-help book, you know, I've written more academic books and articles and stuff. So this is my first, for sure, you know, real practical kind of thing. I wanted to make this very practical. So the idea is that an individual who reads it or a couple that reads the book, they can start saying, okay, is our fight more fight one, fight two, or fight three? And as they identify which fight it is, so for example, why can't you be more like me? I've then tied fight one to the A skills. So for example, things like appreciation would be an A skill that's tied to why can't you be more like me? So for example, if you get somebody who, a partner who doesn't need as much sleep and can get up early in the morning, there might be some real benefits to have one of the partners in a couple be able to do that. They can get some stuff done in the morning. If they have kids, they can watch the little toddlers that are running around. They can actually partner better because they're different. And so the couple appreciates how that difference is helpful. But that same person might also go to bed at 9 o'clock and the other person's up till midnight, right? So right. You could emphasize, you're not like me, and criticize it, or you can appreciate how that difference helps them. And so the fight one and A skills. Fight two is the same way, or B skills. Fight three is three C skills. So part B is, why can't you be more like my family? So being an intentional negotiator, how do you kind of get the best from both of your family backgrounds to make your couple the best? Or fight three is, why can't you understand my pain? So the idea of compassion, really feeling empathy with, so it's a C skill for fight three, is going to be more helpful. So those are all different kinds of skills that you need depending on the fight you're having. Okay. And they actually come from different frameworks of family therapy and couples therapy. They're different family therapy and couples therapy ideas or modalities that you're paying attention to.
Yeah.
So if you're more of a clinician like you, you can also get it from a clinician side of, what do I need to pay attention to? Which skills are going to fit them better?
Yeah. No, I dig it. And I like this idea of, and I'm a big fan of having couples kind of have a way to hit fast forward. Because if we've had this fight before, we know it lasts about 45 minutes. We know that I raise my voice. We know that you end up crying. We know that I get defensive and you get whatever it is. Like, we know what the pattern is. And so if we can sort of go, can we just hit fast forward? Because this is fight A. And then skip all of the actual, save myself 45 minutes and get to the part where, like I said to this couple the other day, what is the end of this? Is the end that somebody wins, you know, or that a door gets slammed, or that, you know, somebody cries, or is the end compassion, or is the end appreciation?
Yeah.
And I think if you can encode that stuff, sometimes it lets you skip the real hard relational work that maybe you're not quite prepared to do because you're an avoider, or you're anxious, you know, whatever it is.
That's good points. Yeah. So each of the fights give you a better perspective on what might really help, to stop just the going around in circles and getting stuck in the old patterns that are just destructive.
That reminds me, I had a client a while back who worked for Microsoft, and he was leading this team for, I don't know, maybe like 16 years or something. And he talked about how on his team, they would start conversations, and he would go, is this number 9? Is this this number 6? Is this number 8? Like, because number 9 ended with the employee solving the problem himself. And number 8 ended with needing to escalate it. And number 6 ended with them having to call a meeting, you know, like, and so they encoded a ton of stuff that just saved them all this, him anyway, a ton of sort of listening through a lot of details before understanding exactly what was happening. So
right. One of the things I did was I pulled a lot of my couples therapy professors and friends, colleagues, and said, what am I missing in these fights? And they said, you know, not too much, because, you know, most of the fights that they see in their therapy room can fit in these three, or a big fight incorporates all of them. You know, you can have a big fight that isn't simplified by just one area. You know, you can have a big money fight that can be about abandonment, family patterns, and your personality all wrapped up in one. And that's a harder one to sort out, you know?
And people are more adept than they think, because they'll be fighting and somebody will start losing and they'll pick a different fight.
Yes.
They'll go straight into another totally different thing. And I'm like, hold up. We can't do two things at once. Like, we need to stay with the first one so that we can figure out what's going on there.
Used to call that in old school behavioral therapy kitchen sinking, which was, you know, you start adding, you have the dishes that are dirty and now you put in the pot and then you put in the glass, you know, like you just keep on putting stuff in the dirty sink, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, I really appreciate you talking to me. I'm a big fan of your book. I'm going to be recommending it. And also, in fact, I think just last week, the Huffington Post asked Laura and I for book recommendations. So I think it's going to be featured in one of their online articles here coming up pretty soon. So if you get a whole bunch of commission checks flooding in your door, don't forget.
I'll know where it came from. Thanks, Zach. Thanks, Laura. Yeah. That's great.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks for filling in for Laura. And I love your book. And I'm glad that I finally read it. And I'm grateful that you talked to me about it today.
Yeah. glad we had this time to chat too. And thanks for your endorsement. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Wasn't she cool? I really enjoyed talking to her, and I'm hoping that we can stay friends. She actually gave me a little bit of insider knowledge after we got off the phone that hopefully I'll be able to share with you later on. But for now, just remember to make sure that we have your email address. In just a couple weeks, we're going to be announcing or rolling out a new program that I hope that you will be interested in. It's based particularly on the survey that you filled out, and I hope it's going to meet you exactly where you are. For now, I hope you've had a great summer. And I'm going to go over to a tennis match and watch my kid play, and then headed to a wedding this weekend. And then, like I said, next week we're back on track with Laura, and I'm excited to pick up where we left off. Thanks a lot. Bye.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.